MyAudiobooks.ai presents Inside the Machine That Eats Cities, a tour of the AI data center.
You hear it before you see it. Driving the access road through what used to be farmland in Northern Virginia, the first thing that arrives is the sound. A low, steady hum with no source and no off switch. The combined voice of 10,000 fans moving air through machines that never sleep. Then the fence comes into view, and behind it, the building. If building is even the right word for something the length of 4 football fields, with the personality of a shipping container. Windowless, flat-roofed, painted a color chosen to be forgotten. There is no sign out front. There is nothing to photograph.
And yet, this unremarkable box is, in energy terms, a city. A small American city that appeared on the grid in 18 months, consumes as much electricity as 100,000 homes, and belongs to a class of structures that is about to absorb more than a tenth of all the power the United States generates. That last number is not a projection from an advocacy group. It comes from the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, the federal lab that has tracked data center electricity for 2 decades, in its June 2026 update of the United States Data Center Energy Usage Report. The reference estimate, 649 terawatt hours of data center electricity consumption in 2030, which is 11.8% of total projected United States electricity use. The lab is careful about uncertainty. Its scenarios range from 521 to 843 terawatt hours, but even the low end of that range represents a more than doubling of what these buildings consumed in 2024. The International Energy Institution, watching the same phenomenon globally, measured data center electricity growth of 17% in 2025 alone, and expects the worldwide total to roughly double to about 950 terawatt hours by 2030. This article takes you inside one of these buildings, through the fence, past the transformers, into the halls, out back to the generators, and then asks the question the tour raises. What happens to a country's electricity system when a tenth of it is suddenly routed through windowless boxes that did not exist 5 years ago? The answer involves the strangest collision in modern infrastructure, an industry that builds in months, meeting a system that builds in decades. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. The tour starts at the fence line, where the real business of a data center announces itself. Before a single server can be racked, the building needs power the way a city needs power, and that means the first structure you meet is not a server hall, but a substation. A hyperscale facility does not plug into the grid. The grid is extended to it. New transmission taps, dedicated substations, transformers the size of shipping containers stepping high voltage down to something the building can drink. Utilities have a formal waiting list for this privilege, and it has a name worth knowing: the interconnection queue, the ordered line of projects waiting for studies, upgrades, and permission to connect to the transmission system. Across the United States, these queues now stretch for years, stuffed with data center applications alongside the solar farms and gas plants meant to feed them. The IEA describes the result plainly. Planning and regulatory systems are being stretched by the wave of project applications, and the mismatch between fast-moving data centers and slow-moving energy investment creates risks that prices will rise in some places if it is not managed. There is a nuance here that explains half the politics you will hear about these buildings. A data center's nameplate capacity, the maximum power its connection and equipment are rated to draw, the number in the press release, is usually bigger than what it actually uses on a given day, because buildings are filled with servers progressively over years, and developers oversize their connections from the start.
Grid planners must plan around the nameplate, because the day the building is full, the draw will be real. So the region commits to infrastructure for a load that may ramp slowly. And when the load arrives late or smaller than promised, the cost of the overbuilt grid lands on everyone else's bills. When you hear a utility commissioner say the words cost allocation, this is the argument they are having. Who pays for the substation built for a promise?
Step through the security gate and into the halls, and the scale of the appetite becomes physical. A data hall is a warehouse of racks, metal frames the size of large refrigerators, stacked with servers in neat rows that stretch to the vanishing point, bathed in cool air and blue light and that endless roar of fans. For two decades, the power these racks drew grew slowly and predictably. Then AI arrived, and the density went vertical. According to the IEA's April 2026 analysis, the power density of AI servers increased 11-fold between 2020 and 2025 and is set to quadruple again by 2027.
The agency translates that into a number worth pausing on. By 2027, a single advanced server rack, one refrigerator-sized frame, could have a peak power demand equivalent to 65 households. A hall of these racks is a suburb. A campus of these halls is a city. And the buildings keep the same unremarkable face to the road.
There is a second number that determines how much strain each building truly puts on the grid, and it matters almost as much as raw size. Engineers call it the capacity factor, the share of the time a facility actually runs near its potential, as opposed to sitting idle. The older internet economy ran surprisingly light, servers waiting for your clicks at 3 in the morning, drawing a fraction of their peak. The AI economy runs hot. Training a large model is not a burst. It is a marathon measured in weeks, with thousands of chips driven near their limits around the clock. And the inference side, millions of users querying finished models all day, never sleeps by design.
A building with a high capacity factor is a fundamentally different animal from a same-sized building that idles. It is a load that never goes away. A flat line on the utility's demand chart, where the system was built to expect valleys. Baseload, the grid operators call it. And they have not had a new source of baseload demand like this arrive, at this speed, in living memory.
Everything in those halls is working, and everything working makes heat. And the heat must go somewhere. Which is why the next stop on the tour is the part of the building that consumes almost as much ingenuity as the computing itself, the cooling plant. Servers that draw 65 households of power per rack produce 65 households of heat per rack continuously around the clock. And if that heat is not removed, the machines cook themselves in minutes. Older facilities move the heat with vast air conditioning. The newest AI halls increasingly pump liquid directly to the chips because air can no longer carry the load. Either way, the building is really two buildings, one that computes and one that refrigerated the first one.
The cooling overhead is why total facility consumption always exceeds what the servers themselves draw, and it is the reason water has become the quiet second front in the data center wars. The dominant cooling technologies split into two families, each with a different bill. Evaporative designs, cooling towers that pass heat into the sky as vapor, use less electricity but drink staggering volumes of water, millions of gallons a day at the largest campuses, in watersheds that were not consulted. Air-cooled and closed-loop designs use little water but demand even more electricity, adding to the very load that strained the grid in the first place.
There is no free lunch in thermodynamics. Every watt of compute becomes a watt of heat. And the heat leaves the building in somebody's river, somebody's aquifer, or somebody else's power bill.
Out back, behind the halls, sits the last major structure, the generator farm. Rows of diesel engines in acoustic enclosures, each one the size of a truck, waiting for a day that everyone hopes never comes. These exist because the building's customers, the AI models, the cloud services, the financial systems, cannot blink. If the grid stutters for even seconds, the diesels must carry the full city-scale load instantly. Which is why a facility that markets itself as the future keeps a small power station's worth of combustion engines idling in reserve out back. The contradiction is not lost on the neighbors. The cleanest-sounding industry in America is anchored at the edge of every campus by a fleet of the dirtiest backup technology ever made.
Some of the newest campuses do not even pretend to wait for the grid at all. They are building their own gas-fired generation on-site, private power plants for private clouds, which is either a pragmatic bridge or the moment the tech industry quietly became a utility, depending on who is describing it.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines.
Now, step back from the building and look at the ledger, because the numbers at the system level are stranger than the numbers in the halls. The IEA measured something that should, by all logic, be reassuring. The energy efficiency of AI is improving at a rate unprecedented in energy history, with the electricity per AI task dropping by at least a factor of 10 per year. A simple text query to an AI model now uses less power than running a television for the same time. And yet total consumption is exploding, growing 17% in 2025, and faster still in the AI-focused facilities, which grew 50% in a single year.
The resolution to the paradox is that the uses are mutating as fast as the efficiency improves. The new generation of workloads, video generation, long-form reasoning, agents that act in the world, can consume hundreds or thousands of times more energy per task than a simple question. Efficiency gives. Appetite takes away. Economists have seen this pattern for 160 years, since William Stanley Jevons noticed that more efficient steam engines led to more coal consumption, not less. The data center is the Jevons paradox rendered in concrete and copper.
The money tells the same story. The IEA reports that capital expenditure by the largest technology companies exceeded $400 billion in 2025, and is expected to jump another 75% in 2026, a sum now larger than the entire world's investment in producing oil and natural gas. The agency literally tracks the construction from space. Its satellite monitoring shows that AI factories, cutting-edge data centers built specifically for AI, more than tripled in capacity in 18 months. And the build-out is no longer confined to the United States. China's data center electricity demand is projected to quadruple by 2030.
This is the largest, fastest private infrastructure build-out since the railways, and it is arriving on a grid that was designed for a slower century.
So what actually happens when a tenth of America's electricity starts flowing to these buildings? The IEA's answer is sober and three-part. First, connections must be managed proactively, queues reformed, permitting streamlined, projections made honest, and the costs of new grid investment allocated fairly rather than smeared across every ratepayer. Second, flexibility can buy time. Data centers that agree to throttle down at peak moments can connect sooner and stop being pure loads, becoming grid resources, the same buildings viewed as batteries and ballast instead of only appetite.
The fourth, the industry must demonstrate that its demand is underwriting new clean supply rather than cannibalizing the existing grid, or the social license to build will evaporate. And here,
The report notes the pushback is already underway, with communities fighting projects across the country. That fight is its own story, and it is the subject of the next article in this series.
Two more structural risks deserve mention before the objections, because they will shape whatever happens next. The first is a supply chain that has become a single point of failure. The IEA warns that the build-out now strains the production of power electronics and transformers, the unglamorous hardware without which no grid can grow, and that some of these inputs depend on a small number of producers, notably China, at the exact moment the industry also faces a shortage of the high-bandwidth memory chips that AI servers require, a shortage expected to persist through at least the end of 2027. The AI revolution's speed is increasingly set not by software, but by factories, mines, and shipping lanes.
The second risk is the mirror image of the boom, and it has a name from the fossil fuel era, the stranded asset, infrastructure built for a future that does not arrive, paid for by people who did not choose it. If the efficiency camp is right and compute per unit of energy keeps collapsing, some fraction of the substations, gas plants, and oversized connections now being built for projected AI load will never be needed at full scale. The facilities will still be there, on the books, in the rate base, and the question of who absorbs that cost, the tech companies that requested the capacity, or the households that will be billed for it, is the sleeper issue inside every one of the $100 billion announcements.
Booms do not have to be bubbles to strand assets. They only have to be wrong about the slope.
The strongest case against the alarm deserves a full hearing, because serious people make it.
It goes like this. The projections are unreliable, and the Berkeley Lab itself admits it. Its own uncertainty bounds span a factor of nearly 2, from 521 terawatt hours, driven by unknowable variables like how long AI chips stay in service and how hard they are actually driven. The efficiency trend is real and accelerating, and history says digital industries dematerialize. The internet was supposed to consume half the world's electricity by now, and instead it runs on a few percent, because engineers are ruthless about waste, when waste is the cost of goods sold.
The grid panic also ignores the supply the demand is calling forth. The same companies are signing record clean energy deals, restarting nuclear plants, and funding grid upgrades that the system needed anyway. On this view, the data center is not a parasite on the electricity system. It is the customer that finally made modernization pay for itself.
Both stories cannot be entirely right, and the honest answer is that the next 5 years will choose between them in public. 3 findings would settle it, 3 falsifiers, and each is watchable. First, if actual measured consumption in 2030 lands near the bottom of the Berkeley range, closer to 500 than 800 terawatt hours, then the efficiency camp was right, and the buildings dematerialized like every digital industry before them. Second, if utility data shows data center-driven rate increases concentrated in the regions that courted the industry, while regions with cost allocation reforms hold prices flat, then the affordability question becomes a policy choice rather than a physics problem, and it will be solved state by state.
Third, if the industry's clean energy commitments measurably cover its new load, new generation built for new demand, tracked and verified, the parasite narrative dies. If the load is instead cannibalizing existing capacity and propping up fossil plants, the social license collapses, and the moratorium wave now starting in American towns will look, in retrospect, like the opening skirmish of a much larger war.
It is worth naming what this article has not claimed. It has not claimed that data centers are pointless or that AI is not useful. The same buildings run the hospital's imaging, the weather models, and the logistics that stock grocery shelves. It has not claimed the high-end projections are certain. The Berkeley Lab publishes its uncertainty in the same table as its estimates, and this article has quoted both. It has not claimed the grid cannot adapt. Grids have absorbed air conditioning, electrified heating, and the automobile.
and it has not claimed the buildings are secret. They are merely unmarked, which is a different and stranger thing. The largest new category of American infrastructure, hidden in plain sight, behind a fence chosen to be forgotten.
Which returns the tour to the fence line, where the hum never stops. Somewhere inside, a rack the size of a refrigerator is drawing the power of 65 households to teach a model to reason a little better. And outside, a substation built for a promise hums along beside it. And down the road, a crew is stringing new transmission for the next one. The internet, it turns out, was never a cloud. It was always a building. A building that eats cities, one substation at a time. And the only real question left is who gets to decide what feeds it. That decision is being made right now, in planning commissions and utility hearings, in the gap between 18 months and 20 years.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.